You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
All right, time for the International Desk on 95BFM on the wire. Today we are going to be talking about the Congo, and we're going to be talking about conflict minerals in electronics. So we're going to be talking about the materials that are mined in the Congo that go into your iPhone and that go into your TVs and your car stereos and all that stuff, and where it comes from and what you can do to avoid buying conflict minerals. Reason I went for this is because there's been talk recently, obviously, about, you know, the border. It started with the border camps in the US, and I was thinking, you know, everyone's going, oh, well, how could you possibly allow to, in this day and age, for children to be put in that situation where, you know, we're seeing, you know, we always thought concentration camps and all that were the past, and now we're realizing that actually this can happen today. So I was thinking of other sort of atrocities and stuff like that, and other things that have kind of revitalized themselves. And a lot of people wonder, you know, with the slave trade back in the 19th century, well, how could that possibly happen today? And I realized that it does happen today, and it does get it does contribute to our cheap consumer electronics. So yeah, let's get into it and see about that.
For New Zealand, industrialised slavery never really had the same impact as it did in other parts of the world. The formalisation of a nation state called New Zealand happened in 1840, 2 years after the British Empire abolished slavery in 1838. However, for the forebears of Pākehā New Zealanders, slavery was inevitably behind the most addictive consumables on the market. Tobacco, sugar, cotton, coffee, and tea all sound like very staple products today. But back then, they were highly fashionable, highly sought after, and therefore perpetuated one of the grossest crimes against humanity, the commodification of human beings. Even after abolition, Britain simply swapped their labour source for Indian indentured labourers under the illusion that their consent was a choice rather than financial coercion. That lasted until 1917, when it became unprofitable. Although, as a side note, it should be said that even though slavery was never legal in New Zealand, ships did leave Auckland Harbour to force Pacific Islanders to work on Queensland plantations in a system called blackbirding, and New Zealanders did reap the rewards of cheap cotton, coffee and tobacco from Australia for decades. The reason I mention all of this is because we as a society look back on horrific institutions like the slave trade and wonder if those goods really mattered enough at the time to justify condoning brutality. We look at the goods of the slave trade through modern eyes, where we think nothing of cotton or tobacco production now that it's all mechanized. However, this piece is going to give you a window into an industry that unnervingly shares many similarities with the slave trade. It's an industry that, like tobacco and sugar in the 19th century, everyone bought into, everyone is complicit in, and in which everyone can do better. The industry I'm talking about is coltan mining. Coltan is the key mineral component of every electronic device in the lives of modern citizens. Smartphones, tablets, computers, laptops, game consoles, televisions, printers, electric car batteries, car stereos, and infotainment systems all include coltan. But what's the problem with coltan? 80% of the world's coltan is in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. By rights, the country's wealth should have boomed as computers became a bigger part of our lives in the 1990s. However, this happened instead.
The trade of these conflict minerals is fueling a conflict in which 5 million people have died. Millions more have been displaced, and local populations have been devastated by sexual violence. The violence is perpetrated by the government and militant insurgent groups who control many of the mines and transport routes in the province of Kivu. These groups are often affiliated with rebel groups such as M23 or rogue units of the National Army of the DRC. They use various methods to extort revenue from mines and other mineral traders in the region.
That was from an Al Jazeera report on the horrors behind the conflict mineral trade in the DRC. Conflict minerals are mostly focused in and around eastern Congo, and as a result, there are currently three separate wars on the eastern Congolese border, one of the most violent and dangerous parts of the world. Reports differ regarding exactly how the mines fund the rebels, but it appears to be indirect. Information differs between sources, with each player in the industry telling a different story or no story at all. For example, Accord South Africa, a humanitarian NGO based on conflict resolution in Africa, reports that during the M23 rebellion in 2013, each truck crossing the border at Goma to the airport in Rwanda was taxed heavily by the rebels. This was corroborated by the UN, who reportedly saw mining trucks pass with no hindrance through central Goma, whilst the M23 rebels raped and pillaged the city in a brutal occupation back in 2013. Further north in the Ituri province, a tribal conflict between the Lendu and Hema tribes has been exacerbated by mineral profits, which give rebels the means to acquire weapons and vehicles. The conflict has recently reignited with reports of cannibalism, rape, and the burning of entire villages. The UN reports that the Ituri rebels on both sides force children as young as 8 years old to mine and fight for them. Boston University in the United States released this report on the conditions in a typical Congolese mine.
There is a region near the Uganda border. It's a region that is mountainous and heavily forested and has a lot of minerals, including diamonds and coltan. This one corner of the country is still doing very badly.
In the worst cases, people are digging these things out of the ground under threat of violence to themselves or their families, often at gunpoint, often using rape as a means of coercion. That doesn't even get into the conditions under which they're working. People are often working barefoot. They're spending many hours a day in standing water. It doesn't matter if people are sick, it doesn't matter if women are pregnant, it doesn't matter if we're talking about children who are 5 or 6 years old. Everyone is brought to work into the mines. The question of how this is all allowed to happen actually brings us to some very ugly truths.
Many of the cell phone manufacturers and computer manufacturers will wash their hands of it and say, oh, well, we're not involved in this mining. But the reality is that they're driving this. And frankly, we're driving it because we want low-cost products. The people who are producing products for us should be living much better lives than they're living. And right now in Congo, they're not.
In 2010, the Democratic U.S. Congress passed the Dodd-Frank Act that required electronics manufacturers to disclose the sources of their product to prevent conflict minerals being sold in mainstream products. Intel and Nokia have complied and have been very cooperative, but Apple and the Chinese phone manufacturers in particular have simply employed different middlemen in the process to cover their tracks. In 2016, the Washington Post tracked cobalt in an iPhone back through several Chinese suppliers to private artisanal mines in the Congo being worked by children and women in a state of quasi-slavery. Samsung has conducted an internal investigation as well, with no clear statement made, and Huawei has not commented on the issue at all. To give you an idea of how the structure seems to work on the ground, it's best to let those on the ground describe how it works. Al Jazeera spoke to a miner called Innocence. He is 16 and has been mining since he was a child. He describes men and women being killed and submerged under the mountain when heavy rain comes in. He says skeletons of dead miners are regularly found in the quest for coltan. The miners, many of whom are children, work dawn till dusk 365 days a year. He says the foreman will take what is found and either hand it to a trafficker or the Mzungu, Congolese for white man, if he deigns to visit the mine. He also hands a cut onto the local militia strongman. They change with the weather these days in the Congo, but the last regular strongman was Bosco Ntaganda of the M23. Known as the Terminator, he is currently on trial at the ICC in The Hague for war crimes. The trafficker will then truck the untraced material covertly across the border to Rwanda or Uganda, where it will be sold to a coltan supplier like Chinese firm Huayo Coltan. All trace of the source is lost at the border crossing, so it can be shipped with no questions asked to China or Mexico, where it will be refined. From there, it will go to an assembly plant where it is packaged in a finished product and ready to be sold in stores to me and you. Here is one of the few reports of the trade secretly recorded by Sky News a couple of years ago.
The children's cobalt is sold cheaply to mostly Chinese traders. They don't ask questions about where their cobalt comes from or who's worked to extract it. They just want the best price.
The black part, yeah, is cobalt.
Even those who aren't Chinese, this trading market has Indian owners, told us they sell onto the dominant Chinese exporter of cobalt, CDM. The cobalt first mined here is then sold again to the Chinese parent company, which then supplies some of the world's biggest battery makers. And those batteries, with ingredients which originated in DRC, end up in, for instance, smartphones. It's an intricate supply chain which allows easy deniability for the multinationals making huge profits. An investigation last year by Amnesty found similar human rights abuses. Nothing appears to have changed. Most of these child miners will never own a smartphone. They barely survive from day to day. And many other children, like Dorsan, will be back again tomorrow, digging out one of the most sought-after minerals of our time for a pittance.
And this is not just a problem between rebels and suppliers. Last year, $750 million of mining revenue from government-supervised mines in the DRC failed to reach the treasury. And since the Dodd-Frank law, the Congolese government have made conflicting statements about their commitment to combat these abuses. This shouldn't come as a surprise, considering the network of government mines in the DRC is kleptocratic at best. Pillaging the resources of nations in the developing world is a long-standing tradition for those from wealthy countries who see a dollar to be made on the continent. Author of the well-known 1899 novel Heart of Darkness, Joseph Conrad, wrote of the Congo in a 1924 essay that it was the vilest scramble for loot that ever disfigured the history of the human conscience. It's unfortunate that even after the brutal rule of the Belgians ended, endless conflict is perpetuated and children are enslaved to satisfy our need for iPhones and touchscreens in our cars. But much like the citizens of North America and Europe during the slave trade, it seems inconceivable to us that this brutality should end because we rely so heavily on our devices for work, for leisure, for even simple tasks around the house. They are incorporated into all aspects of our lives and are key to moving up in the world. But like those abolitionists in the 19th century who worked to bring down another huge, sordid economic structure, the only way we can make sure that our technology is conflict and slave labor free is to acknowledge the abuses that are occurring in the Congo, speak out against it, and call on our representatives in Parliament to act on the issue, so these companies are held to account and these products are not sold in New Zealand.
We don't agree with violence. We do not agree with the government. Nah, we do.
The Wire.
So if you want to know how you can get electronics that are conflict free, there is a phone you can buy called the Fairphone that is made out of ethical materials through a fair supply chain. Workers who put it together and assemble it are paid well. The mines are conflict free. The parts are all replaceable, so you don't just chuck it away like an iPhone and just buy a new one. Even if you do have an iPhone or something like that, recycling your electronics, go recycle them, please. Find somewhere proper to go and recycle them. And if you own a company and if you need to replace your computers or your company phones, both Intel and Nokia are two companies that have been that have promised and have been verified to be conflict free in their products. So go buy Intel computers for your employees and go give them company phones made by Nokia.
Thank you very much, Connor.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.